So normally we give a bit of meditation instruction to 3:15. Is that about right? Something like that. And then we meditate through to 4 and then have some questions. Does that sound about right? Okay. If you know all about it, why don't you do it? That's what you should do, right? If you guys took turns teaching meditation, then you'd know how easy it is. Okay. So I'll just say a few words about meditation. So I mentioned about last night in the talk we did, and before the talk we did some breath meditation. So I might continue on that theme and do some breath meditation today as well. And of course, all of you who are here presumably have some experience in meditation, and so it's not completely new to you. And one of the things with meditation is that we really don't need that much to keep going. Like often they can have like really complicated meditation instructions and very impressive looking systems and things like that. But to be honest, it doesn't really make that much difference. The main thing with meditation is not so much the system that you're doing or the method that you're doing, but it's more the attitude that you bring to the meditation. And meditation should build on like a foundation of good ethical conduct and a foundation of like a wholesome emotional development. So we shouldn't be using meditation as a cure-all to fix our woes and our problems, right? So if you're like going to work and you're getting all stressed out and then you're thinking, oh, I need to get home and do some meditation to de-stress myself, this is the wrong use of meditation, right? You should be turning around and saying, how can I not be stressed at work, right? How can I fix the thing that's actually causing the problem? So of course, sometimes you can't do that. I'm not saying that you're to blame if you get stressed. I'm just saying that if we do get stressed or in a difficult situation, we need to look for what the causes of that stress are rather than trying to keep on doing the thing that creates the problem and then try to fix it by doing some meditation. All right? So don't use meditation to fix your stress or something like that. Fix your stress by fixing the cause of your stress. And then when you're nice and peaceful in that, and then you come to meditate, and you're like, oh, meditation's easy. I'm not using it to solve all those problems. So meditation should be something that's very simple and that's very easy. And breath meditation in particular is very easy and very nice, because when we're doing breath meditation, like I mentioned yesterday, we let the breath do the work. This is a really important thing. Don't try to focus on your breath. Please listen to what I'm saying and please take it to heart. Please listen carefully. Almost everything in the way that people talk about meditation normally is just wrong. And they use language in a way that just creates completely unnecessary problems. And so we use this language like, oh, I'm going to try to focus on the breath. And it's just wrong. The Buddha never talked that way. He never used that kind of language when talking about meditation. When the Buddha talked about breath meditation, he said, so satova asasati, sato pasasati, mindful one breathes in, mindful one breathes out. That's a different way of looking at it, isn't it? Not sit down and try to focus on your breath. You sit down and breathe mindfully. Yeah? It's a very, very different kind of attitude to the breath. And so what happens is that we're actually shaped, our minds are shaped by this language, this way of thinking and talking about meditation. And when it's shaped that way, unconsciously, that actually conditions what we do when we sit down to meditate. We try to focus on this thing that's called the breath, but of course the breath isn't a thing. Right? There's no thing that is the breath. And so you try to focus on this thing, which doesn't exist, lo and behold, it doesn't work. Breath isn't a thing. Breath is something that it's an action. It's a behavior. It's something that you are doing. So do that thing mindfully. Right? Focus on the breathe mindfully. So satova asasati. Asasati is a verb. Right? Breathes. Yeah? breathes. And that breathing, that process of breathing, that when we think about the process of breathing, most obviously it means that it's a way of exchanging oxygen, keeping our body alive. And ever since ancient times, possessing breath has been a synonym for being alive. So each time that we breathe, you know that you're alive. But if you think about it, it goes even deeper than that. Because not only does breathing show that we individually are alive, but breathing shows that we're part of a cycle of life. We can only breathe in oxygen because plants have breathed it out. Right? Plants can only breathe out oxygen because they breathe in carbon dioxide, which we breathe out. And our whole planet, all of the nature, is going through these cycles. Even you think about it, if you think about a rock in the just sitting out there in the sun, like when the sun comes onto a rock, it warms, and when it warms, it expands. There's more space in it, and then at night time it cools, and when it cools it contracts. So even like a rock is actually, in a certain way, is just breathing very slowly and very subtly every day and every night. It has that movement in it. And so all things in nature have that kind of movement and that kind of rhythm. And so when we're breathing, we're participating in that rhythm. We're in harmony with the cycles and the rhythms of nature, and particularly with the nature of our own bodies. And so this is why that experience of breathing is so soothing, right? And everybody knows that, right? If you get anxious or angry or something, people will say, take a couple of deep breaths. That's how you calm yourself down. And so that process of breathing is a process that is there in order to calm you down. It's not you doing it. So one of the stories that I like to tell about this is a little parable about two friends who worked in an office together. And one day it was very, very hot. Very, very hot. And the air conditioning broke down in the office. I was in Sydney a few years ago, and we had a day, it was 47 degrees. I was in the Buddhist library there. Can you imagine, 47 degrees, and no aircon? It's so hot that all anybody can do is stumble around in the heat saying, wow, it's really hot. That's what extreme heat is like. So at the end of that day, your friend says, okay, let's go down to the beach and cool off. So you say, great. So you get in your car, you drive down to the beach, get out of the car, and you go for a walk along the beach. And it's so beautiful and cool, a very gentle breeze coming in. It's not a Perth beach, so it's not the Fremantle Doctor. You're not blown off your feet by a gale. Very gentle breeze. Soft, lapping waves coming in. A few people around, but not too many. And you walk along the beach, and you can feel all of the stresses and hassle of the day just sort of falling away. And then when you walk down the beach for a while, you just sit down. You just sit down, the two friends next to each other on the beach, just enjoying that peace. Right? Unfortunately, to sully this ideal scenario, one of those friends is a meditator. And the one who's not a meditator sits there and is very peaceful because it's a beautiful, peaceful place. The waves, the breeze, everything's making them peaceful. The meditator sits there and thinks, right, now I've got to really focus to make myself peaceful. I'll count all of the waves coming in and going out. One wave coming in, one wave going out, one wave coming in. Oh, my mind's drifting. What's that? Oh, how many waves was that? Oh, I have to go back to the beginning and start again. Okay, now, where was that? One wave coming in, one wave going out, one wave. Oh, almost missed that one. Hang on, bring it back. One wave coming. Oh, how many was that? No, three. hang on, one way of coming in. Half an hour later, the other friend saying, oh, it's so peaceful here, it's so lovely. And now, oh, I just can't make myself focus, you know, I'm just trying to be peaceful and it's just not working. So this is what the breath is for you. The breath is that environment, it is that context that is there all the time trying to calm you down. Right? The breath is like a good friend that's just ready to give you a hug whenever you need it. Right? Don't get in the breath's way. Just be at peace. Let the breath calm you down. Yeah? This way you don't need too much of a meditation technique or something. Yeah, it's good to know a few little details and so on about a technique so you're not completely adrift. But don't get too fixated on them. Let the breath calm you down. Stay out of its way. Yeah? And when you look at it in this way, actually meditation is really easy. Really, meditation is the easiest thing in the world. So natural, and it's just so much a part of what it means to be alive. We're flowing with that nature of what it means to be alive rather than trying to battle against it. And yeah, all of these things happen, the mind drifts and different feelings and emotions come up, and that's okay. And you just accept them and you move on. And you keep on moving on and you keep on moving on. And that's what peacefulness is. Before we start to meditate, I'll give one more parable or one more little story just to illustrate this. And it's a story that I really like. And this is a story, not really a story, but a discussion amongst medieval Indian aesthetic philosophers. Okay? So in Indian philosophy, of course, is very, very big and complicated. And one field of philosophy is the aesthetics, right? The theory of what makes something beautiful, what makes an artwork beautiful. And according to Indian philosophy, each artwork has a rasa, has a flavour. And the flavour that it has, or the mix of those flavours, then determine the aesthetic quality of that work of art. And so any work of art should have a defined rasa, a defined flavour, which would allow you to assess that art. And one of the big problems with Indian aesthetic theory is the Mahabharata. And of course many of you will have heard of the Mahabharata, the great epic of Indian literature. And Mahabharata is so huge, and it's got so many things in it. It's incredible, right? It's the most incredible story ever told. So complicated, so many different stories, wild things, crazy things, wars and philosophy and all of these kinds of things going on in the Mahabharata. It seemed impossible to pin it down. And all of the philosophers would argue with each other about what was the rasa of the Mahabharata, because how could you have an aesthetic theory that couldn't give an aesthetic account of the greatest work of art of all? And so they would be back and forth arguing what rasa that the Mahabharata was, until one of the philosophers came on and said, no, the rasa of Mahabharata is Shantarasa. Shantarasa. And this was not a real rasa, he just made it up. Shantarasa, the flavour of peace. Yeah? The real flavour of the Mahabharata is the flavour of peace. And everyone was like, how can that be so? Mahabharata is full of war, it's full of conflict, it's full of drama, it's full of all of these things. How can that have the flavour of peace? And then the answer was, it has the flavour of peace precisely because it is full of all of those things. Because it doesn't reject any of those things, because all of those things are life. And it has made peace with life. Because it's not excluding any aspect of life, any aspect of imagination, any aspect of humanity. It's all included in that. And because it's at peace with all of those things, the flavour of the Mahabharata is the flavour of peace. Very beautiful idea, isn't it? Yeah? If you think about that when it comes to your meditation, rather than thinking, oh, I've got to get rid of all of those things that make me uncomfortable, get rid of all those emotions that are bad or that make me suffer or anything like that. Accept them all. Be at peace with all of those things. If you're angry, that's a part of you. Don't try to get rid of anger. Anger's all right. If you feel greedy, that's okay. That's a part of you. If you try to get rid of it, you're trying to get rid of part of yourself. And if you're trying to get rid of part of yourself, you're going to lose. You're going to be in a battle forever and you're going to lose that battle. So you have to accept all of these things. It's just how it is. If you're suffering, it's okay. Pain is just pain. Anger is just anger. Stupidity is just stupidity. It's all right. Thinking is just thinking. It's just part of who you are. So we don't make a problem out of it. You just accept it, you'll be at peace with it. And then you'll find that within the breath, that all of those things can settle and can be resolved until you're at peace with all of those things. And that kind of peace is deep and profound. It's not the brittle that kind of peace that comes because you're holding things down and suppressing them. It's the profound and wise kind of peace that comes through acceptance and understanding. Okay, so let's do some breath meditation for the next 45 minutes or so. And now coming near the end of the meditation, gradually bring your mind back into the senses, back into the body. Hear the sounds around. Open your eyes a little bit, let a bit of light in. And before we finish the meditation, just reflect back over the last 40, 45 minutes. What's happened? How has my mind changed? What was going on? What's different now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? And finally, we can share the merits of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu. Thank you so very much. Okay, so a few interesting questions today. So first one, Amanda from Perth. When things are going wrong, I start to spiral. How can I turn the situation around and find peace? It's hard to find peace in a bad situation. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and I hope that you do manage to get yourself into a good situation. Of course, it is very hard to find peace in a bad situation, and if there's conflict and stress in your environment, then it makes it really hard. So, first of all, don't feel bad about that. Just remember, that's how it is. And so, there's nothing, you know, it's not nothing personal. It's not because of you that makes it difficult. But there's no need for you to spiral. One thing to remember: if the situation is bad, okay. So, I mean, I can't say too much because we only have a very general description. But if the people around you are suffering or stressful and these kinds of things, remember that they need you just as much as you need them. And when you start to spiral and go out of control, then you're no longer a refuge and an anchor for them. And no matter how much you feel lost, at the very least, you have an idea of what meditation is. You have an idea of what peace might be. And you have a thought that peace is something that you want to find. And even just that much is already pretty good. So if the situation around you is chaotic, you be the harbor for others to find shelter. Don't always expect the situation to give you peace. Ask yourself, how can I bring peace to this situation? That's why people are acting out. That's why people are creating bad contexts because of the suffering inside of themselves. And so see as much as you can, if you can respond from a place of love and acceptance, and then that's how we can start to turn things around. Okay, so Michael from Florida. How's it going, Michael? Hope Florida is treating you well. What can I do or tell myself when my fear and phobias play out in horrifying detail when I'm meditating? This often disrupts my meditation completely. Well, I am not surprised. Fear and phobias play out in horrifying detail when you're meditating. Look, it sounds to me like you need to back off. And like if someone was saying that they experience fears or something in meditation, I say that's fine. But when they're in horrifying detail, back off. Don't go too far into it, and don't if you have deep fears and phobias and these kinds of things, don't expect meditation to solve these things. Meditation might help, but it's quite likely that it won't. So what I would suggest is to, like, if you need help or you need support or counselling or something like that, then find the help and support you need. And if your fears and your phobias are playing out and it's too intense in your meditation, back off, meditate for less time. Do walking meditation. It's less intense than sitting meditation. Right? And just take it at a slower pace. And if you're finding that the meditation's getting out of control, that means that you're pushing it too hard. Okay, so then Lex in Thailand. How's it going, Lex? Bhikkhunis in Thailand, you said, I'm not exactly sure what the syntax is implying here, but Bhikkhunis in Thailand, you said the existing Chinese lineage stems from a unification of Dharmaguptaka with Sarvastivada. Can you elaborate? ? Okay, so this isn't a meditation question, but I presumably it's saying that I said that the existing Chinese lineage stems from unification of Dharmaguptaka with Sarvastivada. Kind of, not entirely. For those of you not familiar or with the background to the question, in ancient India there were a number of different schools of Vinaya, and the school of Vinaya that we come from, we call Theravada these days, actually stems from the Mahavihara in Anuradhapura. And there were many other different schools. One of those schools was called the Dharmaguptaka, and that school is the school that forms the basis of the monastic lineages in Eastern Asia, China, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, Vietnam, and so on. So the Chinese lineage, the Vietnamese lineage and so on, then they regard themselves as Dharmaguptaka. So even though we think of monastics in those traditions as being Mahayana, right? So in terms of doctrines and practices, then they follow Mahayana teachings. But in terms of their Vinaya and their ordination, then they are Dharmaguptaka. And Dharmaguptaka Vinaya is essentially identical with the Theravadan one, the Pali Vinaya. There's only minor details in difference. So in the history of China, when Buddhism was brought to China, originally it was brought to China from different sources and different directions. So the different schools and different traditions and lineages were set up around China, and it was quite diverse. And at a certain point in Chinese history, they said, hang on, we should unify and we should create one lineage. And so that's what they did. And they created the lineage and unified the whole of China under what we call the Dharmaguptaka lineage. And that's why China today is Dharmaguptaka. So the Vinaya lineage is Dharmaguptaka, but previously in China there was also Sarvastivada and other lineages. But in addition to that, the Vinaya practice in China has also been informed by commentaries and treaties and ideas which have come from the different schools, especially the Sarvastivada. So even though they use the Dharmaguptaka Vinaya and have Dharmaguptaka lineage, they will still use, for example, Sarvastivada commentaries and so on to inform that. So there are certain ideas and things which you find in Chinese Buddhism or East Asian Buddhism which actually come from the Sarvastivada Vinaya and not from the Dharmaguptaka Vinaya. So even though all the Vinayas are very similar, of course there are always minor differences of detail and interpretation. And sometimes, you know, these differences, even though they're minor, sometimes they can have a big effect, right? It might just be a small change in the Vinaya, but it sometimes can have a significant effect. So I'm not sure if it would be quite true to say that the Vinaya lineage is a merger of Dharmaguptaka and Sarvastivada. It is Dharmaguptaka, but it is formed into Dharmaguptaka from a pre-existing tradition which was a mixture of different schools and which has a Sarvastivada lineage. So I hope that clarifies that question for anybody who's interested in the history of Buddhist monastic lineages. Not sure if there's anybody here, but anyway, there you go. So any questions before we finish up? Okay, so let's finish by paying respects to the Triple Gem.